What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Tina Satter.
Welcome.
Welcome,
Thank
Tina.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy
and
to be with
you. And you look like you're ready for a party.
I mean,
it's amazing.
Well, Tina and I were just talking about...
You look like Cruella de Vil.
Right?
You skinned Dalmatians. It's a puff sleeve blouse.
It's really good. And it does feel almost like Dalmatian, actually, when you touch it.
Confusing with the fabric.
It's really good. It's really good.
It has a ruffled collar and puff sleeves.
Well, people see a photo of it because this is taking a photo and posting it on the gram.
Your screen's cracked.
I dropped my phone.
I'm sorry.
I was in a faculty meeting that was so long, and I walked out of it, and I picked up my phone. It was one of those kind of like, whoa, like where you feel like a cartoon character.
I mean, it is one of those fierce single cracks, but you know, that doesn't bode well.
You don't
Sorry.
Have the protector?
I don't. So I had it, and the way the queen at the iPhone store put it on, it started to peel at the edges, and it looked so gross. And I was like, I don't want this anymore.
Right.
And I peeled it off, and then... 6 months later, dropped my phone. So in that time, I got to have a really sleek... And the number of times I've dropped this phone, I've dropped it a lot.
Before we... I just have to say, I'm sorry, Tina.
No problem.
All the other phones that aren't Apple phones have like these unbreakable screens. I think you could throw them at walls. You can drop them in oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the Apple people are like, we're not going to do that.
You know what
it's
else I
evil.
Hate? The Apple Buds, like, they don't fit well in ears. You can't
We all have those. Different ears.
We all, those, like,
How
hard.
How can every
do
bud
you,
be
what
the
do
same?
Do you use them?
The app, I use those Apple
the
Buds.
The wireless?
I bought a shady pair of wireless ones that at, like, a dime store, and they lasted
I mean,
for
last a
day.
In my hand. No, I would lose them in a second.
Oh, they only, well, literally only last a day.
I have $10 ones. They're still working.
The
I mean, they're
wireless?
Bad. Yeah, they have a little wire that connects them, though. Like,
I've
they look like glasses holders, like for grandpa.
Right. Yeah, that's what I had. They didn't. Those didn't work either. They're like a in-ear thing.
Very uncomfortable.
But I hate the Apple Buds, and I hate you, Apple, for making your headphones like them. And yet, I love the design of your phone, and so I still have it
because
I don't know how to use anything else because I'm too stupid.
I have. I'm really. I'm like trapped in.
They trap you.
They
I
do
used
trap you.
My first smart was a Samsung, and I felt actually that weird nerd cool thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That I hadn't gotten an Apple yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I got the Apple.
What year did you get the Apple? Do you remember?
Yeah, like 2014. Because my then partner
wow,
was like, God damn it,
out.
Just get an Apple.
You really helped.
Like get
out.
In with
People
everyone else.
Who have a Samsung, I just assume that they know more.
Well,
they know something.
Tech. Straight dudes have that.
Yeah.
Just if that tells us anything.
I've hooked up with a couple tech
felt
straight
cool.
dudes, I've got to say. And I had a good time.
Most of them are pretty, like, you know, Android.
Yeah.
Androidish.
Mm.
If you're an Android, you have an Android.
But I got the Apple, then that broke. Something crazy happened, and I was like, it was going to be so expensive to replace it. I was like, fuck it. I'm just going back to a Samsung. And they're like, there's basically no way you will lose everything. Like
every
contact. That's when
right.
I knew they really had me, and
right.
I was like, "Fine, just I'll put it on a payment plan."
Or you hire an intern to transfer all your material.
Oh, you could have.
It's like,
you could have.
Really crazy. There's no going back. Like once
there is
you're,
no once you're in.
Yeah.
I got my first iPhone. I was dating Michael Sheriff at the time. Did you ever meet him, Reed? Anyhow.
He sounds so familiar.
And he was like, you have to, I don't know if dating's the right word, but he was like, you need to get an iPhone. I had like a flip phone razor type thing.
Oh, I love that.
And he was like, girl, no one has that. And this was like 2010, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
2009. No, it was 2009.
I'm always the last person to get the thing.
You were. I remember when you got yours, and you also got it with, like, Virgin, and it really,
uh-huh.
you were like, well, I don't seem to be able to call anyone or text anyone. And I was like, what kind of plan do you have? And you're like, well, Virgin was only $10 a month. And I was like, that's why.
Anyways,
no talk, no text.
Talk. This was tech talk with Jack Reed and Tina.
It really was. It was a tech talk. We began with a full tech talk. And,
well, your show was very technical.
Your yes. show, yeah.
And it was tight.
And there's a discussion of cell phones in it, too.
Yeah, of course. Throughout. There is. Well, and I was kind of like, how do you work this thing? Because yes. they don't seem to work them. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen Is This a Room, go see it.
What also an amazing title, and that it was just pulled from... Right. It's amazing that someone said, is this a room?
Right?
It was
right.
so weird. That I was like, what do you mean, is this a room?
Totally.
Right.
Totally.
Is this a room? Didn't Becca say it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unknown male, which is the role called for in the transcript. That's what they called
amazing.
That voice.
What are the characters? So if you haven't seen it, go see it. And also know that we're going to be talking about it. So there might be some spoilers, but there also might be some intrigues.
Yeah.
So what are the names of the people on the... So first of all, tell us what this piece is about.
Sure. So in real life, on June 3rd, 2017, the FBI surprised a woman with the real name, Reality Winner.
I can't believe it.
Given at birth.
Confused me so much. I was really like...
because you didn't know?
This is a show about this transcript by a Reality Winner.
Right.
Oh.
Reality Winner.
No.
I was like, she won a thing. I was so confused.
Totally.
Her name is Reality something.
Because I remember when this story...
Reality Winner.
Mm-hmm. I remember when the story happened and being like, this name, what's going... I was like, here we go. Just stranger and stranger. Camus land. Like,
I know. I mean, I think it's even why people didn't totally pay attention to her story in a part. Because they felt like it was a reality show winner.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that was for me at first until I came upon the transcript. But anyways... So
on that date, the FBI surprised.
So and all this talk leads into like what's called for on stage, but in real life, 11 armed male agents ultimately show up at her house. And she had leaked this thing that was top secret, but it was proof of Russian interference in our election. Lots of hilarious things to say about that. But and they had caught her. She leaked it a couple weeks before, and they come to her house
Where
to question
she
her
work?
About it. She worked for an NSA place called Pluribus because
mm-hmm.
she had as a because of her linguist skills because
right.
she'd been in the Air Force from 18 to 24 and she knew three Arabic languages
right.
so she obviously at this point in our military complex
she was a translator
but
also taught yoga.
Right, I mean, and she's such an so fast. I mean, I just have so much, the different sides of her owns guns, is obsessed with those animals.
Right.
I mean, if you ever look at her like social media footprint, you just see like a 24-year-old girl who's taking pictures of kale salad. Like you wouldn't see the military side. You wouldn't even see the language. Like that's why she's just so fascinating to me.
Right.
Or this very interesting. What does it mean to be a young patriot? And I, like truly kind of interested in that. But the transcript itself, which is what we stick to almost like literally word for word, and dramatically we use that as the like script totally noted only for people on it. And like why it almost felt like a play to me the first time I looked at the transcript was it listed out participants as if it was a character list.
Mm-hmm.
And participants were Reality Lee Winner, they'd spelled her middle name wrong, which we didn't know at first. Agent Justin Garrick, who's played by Pete Simpson.
Who I've known since I was 18.
Right.
He was, I mean,
it's
he
it's
is.
A, it was like a mind-boggling sort of math thing he did in terms of the specificity. I couldn't believe it. I was like, how did you do this memory-wise? Because I can't remember a word, but.
No, I know. That at the level he is by syllable.
Yeah.
By cough.
By sound,
it
was
totally
virtuosic.
So incredible.
It is. And then the amazing line, which I think is actually so critical of the whole piece that he in particular brings, is like that naturalism, but then just so lightly stylized.
Mm-hmm.
It's like really this incredible tension
mm-hmm.
that feels sort of important. But then the fourth character called for on the
who is
transcript.
The third character?
Oh, Reality Agent Garrick, and then Agent Wally Taylor, who's played by T.L. Thompson, and then the fourth person was unknown male, and I was like, "What the fuck is that?" Like, that was a super intriguing detail before I'd read it, and then we came to learn that that was probably picking up the voices of the nine other men, and that's why they're. Is a non sequitur quality that we did have to build this logic a little bit into and made the choice to give, as we come to call unknown male, give Becca the devices and, Yeah.
And Waze is sort of stalking the perimeter and right. while then moving center and then moving yeah. back to this
sort
of
in and out. Life, as she was in that, there would have been so like the, just the feeling of all these bodies around
mm-hmm. right.
her space and yeah. would have been there. So
and so when so you first read the story, talk us through the progression to building the piece.
Yeah, I mean, so this happened in
which June. I mean, it's yeah. theater. It's at the Vineyard Theater, and yeah. yet for me, it's performance art and dance and.
Yes.
And theater, and it's something that I feel, it's work that excites me so much as someone who can actually Venn diagram these forms and feels very contemporary in that right. way.
Thank you. I mean, that I think those are a lot of the artistic values went into building it just right. in a very holistic way. But yeah, so it's very nice to see that it can hold that even in a space like in this off-Broadway theater. But yeah, I had heard of Reality very vaguely in June when this happened, but because of her name, I was like, I'm not paying attention to that. I don't like reality TV shows, even though I love the Kardashians. So I...
does Aaron, I believe.
Yes, uh-huh. we share an intellectual mm-hmm. interest in the Kardashians.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways... Then in December 2017, so like 6 months pass, I'm actually working on another show that would have fulfilled my commission at The Kitchen for January 2019, which is when this originally had this premiere run.
What show was that?
Well, it was just a thing I had in development. It was okay. not ever in the world. Like okay. I knew I had a commission and I was slowly working on this idea right. I had. And but then read this profile on Reality in New York Magazine that December 2017. And immediately was fascinated with everything we just discussed. I was like, right. what? This is right. really crazy. And then that had a link to the transcript. And as soon as I started reading that, I'm like, this is a play. It's so weird. It's so funny. And then the other critical factor was that Reality looked enough like Emily Davis, who mm-hmm. I had worked with for 10 years. And I was like, And like within like, I read that all in like an hour of literally killing time, forward it to Emily. And I'm like, do you know about her? Take a look at this. Maybe it could be a play, you could play her. And then Emily, you know, any actress, she's like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, like, I don't even know.
What?
Yeah.
This might take a minute, yeah. but what is Emily's story as an actress? Like, how do you know her and
right.
how is she not?
Right.
She is someone I think who Reed and I are very
I can't, to be, I think I can't she's believe about her.
To, I mean, she's been in truly underground, which crazily people have been like, she's really major. I hope and think and that... This in particular, of course, has given her a huge platform, but she's super trained and craft. She's an actress who's just ended up being a bit downtown. She went to NYU. She was in Tisch. And she's a contemporary, you know, now she, well, through Half Straddle, she's friends with Aaron Markey and all of us. Right. We're all like a cohort of humans a bit in the world. But she, yeah, she's sort of just... I mean, she should talk more about this, or like, but she kind of
we should have her on
found
because
herself
we really talked a lot about her in off, Singlet, which was
yeah,
our favorite
right.
show.
She
of
is so good in that.
Last, I mean,
well, she's so good in this, yeah.
and
show.
She is
yeah.
so good
tremendous.
Show.
Yeah, I mean, so like, because she's so we've been working together like 10 years, and so that's a bulk of her like adult working life. And
how did you meet?
Jess Barbagallo, who's the real heartbeat of Half Straddle, if we're all honest with ourselves. And Jess
okay.
and I met at grad school. And Jess used
I
to live right
Jess.
Down here. So this is on our heyday of our early
right.
whatever we were was around this area. Yeah, Jess is amazing. But Jess had an early Half Straddle second or third show. I needed to cast someone. And Jess had remembered Emily Davis from NYU, was not friends with her yet. But remember, there's this really good actress at NYU. And so she came in and read for something and was in the first play that Aaron Markey was in called Family, where Emily essentially played me and Aaron Markey played my hilarious little sister. Family drama.
Did that happen at Dixon Place?
We did it at the Ontological Hysteric. Like, it
oh,
might
wow.
have still been called that. And
wow.
then within a year, it became Incubator Arts Project. And
right.
then a couple
right.
years later... We did a crazy thing called Sliding Whores at Dixon Place that, like, I'm sort of proud of.
That is something to be proud of.
A mini British rom-com. Like
Sliding Whores.
Yeah. I took all
really
these
good.
Lines from Sliding Doors
uh-huh.
and then also wove in other British phrases.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, Emily or Aaron weren't in that. Anyways, and then Em's just started working with us and... you know, she wants to be and will be and should be an actress. Do you know what I mean? Right. I think she's loved this kind of work. And again, she could talk to that. But she's an actress. You know what I mean? She's been an actress since she was 8 years old.
She's unbelievable.
She went to the Performing Arts High School in Dallas. Right. Like, this is her life's
work. I don't believe in most actors.
Right. Especially on stage.
Especially.
So here's what's exciting, Tina. You know who hates theater?
Who?
Reed.
Oh, right. I mean, I get it fully.
And so do I. And
but I loved Selah and I loved this show.
Yes.
Right.
There's a kind of specificity and rigor to this work that makes it really, there's a choreography to it you're like, this is a show. It's not like people, and it was mic'd, thank you very much.
Yes.
It isn't people yelling out to the audience as if we're supposed to believe that's how they're talking to one another. It's insane.
Well, it's very intimate. And then the choreography creates a strangeness so that it continually feels destabilized while also real. And Emily has these sort of insane twists where she all of a sudden will go into, where all of a sudden formally she speeds up, she has gestures, and then all of a sudden drops all of that and goes into this other very, and it does feel like this, you know, these ways in which, on stage, and for those of us who make these theater performance events, I feel so that we're so penetrated by style and now use it to weaponize our work.
Right.
And it's a real wielding of it. It's such craft in it. It's so great.
Yeah.
So then you sent it to Emily and you're like, and she's like, yeah, I'll do this.
So then for like, this was like the kind of fun time of it for like 2 months. And at that point, I lived with Emily and Jess Barbagallo in an apartment in Bushwick where I lived for several years, like half straddle. They called the bathroom the actor's studio. it was like a hilarious, dysfunctional half straddle house. But in that apartment, and sometimes we'd rent a rehearsal space, we just kept reading it out loud. Emily, and then I knew there needed to be, that the other three roles had to be some form of male energy. And that was, it didn't have to be a cis body. It did not have to be a cis body. It just had to be whatever felt like some version of this intangible male energy to me. And that we just would call in tons of people to come read through it with us and be like transparent that it was like, we're just trying to figure out, is this anything? We're also starting to figure out the alchemy of these agents with Emily. And so all these amazing people, friends and others would offer, you know, would come and do that hour with us, like from Jess to Ari Fliakos to, of course, that's where we first saw Pete.
Right.
Tons of people. I mean, and everyone was this super, and I never really audition. Like, that's not how I've normally done plays. Very occasionally. Aaron Markey was an audition, actually. Hilariously enough.
Aaron has told me, Aaron and I have shared audition stories, and I don't know that Aaron and I audition, really.
Right, no, I mean, now I'm sure they wouldn't, but like, also that was years ago, I'd gone to see them, also Jess and Chris had recommended Aaron, I saw when they pulled the scroll out of their vagina and sang the Lollipop Guild, like their Carol Schneeman. And then Aaron, I was like, yes, they're amazing, but like, it was a play, and I was still sort of new in the whole thing, and I had this 40-hour week day job on 17th and Park or 19th and Park where I was like a copywriter in this big PR agency, and I was like, Aaron, come to my office, and I just like in this like total corporate sitting, and I just like snuck into the conference room and like read Aaron Markey like at a conference room table. Like,
what play was this for?
Family, which was sort of this seminal play because that's where we all met, sort of.
Wow.
But it was just, and no one, of course, in that kind of place, if you just do that thing, no one's really paying attention.
Right.
And no one really ever paid attention to me there anyway. Like, I didn't do anything for 3 years till the layoffs started, but I had a BlackBerry. But like, Aaron Markey just, and we don't even know each other yet, and like comes in with a big ponytail, and we're like sitting
in a conference room.
But as soon as they read this amazing Valley Girl sister of mine was like, okay, I'll let you know.
Aaron is like my Leo brother.
We should go back and do a really good headshot resume.
There's your next show. It's like a conference room and coming in and being like, yeah, so, you know, and like, all whatever that text was.
Do you know Chris Giarmo?
Of course I know
okay,
Chris.
So, and I, for years I had these office jobs, and Chris Yermo, like, infamously has taken a shit in every office job I've had. Like, he's always like, I need to use the bathroom. And
amazing.
Like, pop up to the fancy places I was
But
working.
Didn't Chris and Jess give, like, a toilet to Dixon? I keep going back
oh,
to
yes,
Dixon
Place. Oh, yes, I know. Their name is over that toilet. It's so good.
It's really good. I was recently thinking back to early shows I did at Dixon Place and how fun they were.
Well, funny, just talking about, is this a room? It's like me in terms of the content
yeah.
and in terms of some of the like transcribed bits, but.
Yeah. So Tina and I got to talk after I saw this room. So I found the transcript of Lisa Nowak.
Oh, right.
When she was taken in from trying to abduct the other female astronaut. I can't remember her name because there was an act in that show was called What Are the Garbage Bags For? Because I couldn't get over this transcript when they said, what are these garbage bags for? So Reed played the person
I played
who
the
was,
police interrogator.
He played the police interrogator,
oh, wow.
But it was choreographed in this way so that it kept destabilizing me as Lisa.
Right.
Like, there's this part where the interrogator says to Lisa Nowak, because she keeps talking about the guy
right.
she's obsessed with, and he goes,
right.
you need to get him out of your head. And so I had Reed, like, fold in half and, like, snap his neck while saying it. It was fun. Transcripts are good.
Right. And that
they're
destabilizing.
A great source.
Totally. That's what it offers you. Because we were always, Emily and I were always in convo, and then as the ensemble of, like, in a way, this should all feel like what it felt for, like, for reality,
yeah.
right? And so if that's what
yes.
sort of, like, some of the things you called out that Emily does so intuitively and beautifully of, like, gestural. And then, I mean,
yeah.
of course, we are directing at times the pace and stuff, literally just, that has nothing to do with content, but to just make the formal frame of it hold.
Right.
But, yeah, but it serves that, like, sense of, like, it speeds up or, yeah. That
well, and what happens
what's
in the,
going
and you
on
feel
around
like what's
or,
happening
yeah.
for, it is this thing about what's happening for her and how
mm-hmm.
is this,
right.
like when the three of them stand behind her and she's facing one direction,
right.
the light shifts, the blackouts,
yeah.
the use of sound was so
it's,
great.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so successfully captures the, how fearful this situation
right.
must have been and how,
right.
how awful for her it was.
Right.
But
when you did it at the kitchen, reality came.
Reality did not come because she has literally been in jail since this day.
Wait.
She has been in custody since hours after what is on stage. Her mom
Then I had a dream
oh, yeah.
that
no, but her
she
mom came.
Came
and her really beautiful, really smart sister came and her stepdad and these family friends came.
Have you gotten to speak with her?
Emily has corresponded with her through some forms of jail mail, but no one. We've never spoken directly to Reality.
She is still
how
yeah.
long will she be there?
She'll have about 2.5 more years. Like when she was arrested in June 2017, taken into custody that night, denied bail several times, was stayed in jail for 1.5 years in the first place she was taken in Augusta, Georgia, was scheduled to go to trial in October 2018. She pled not guilty, was going to go to trial, and then
why
suddenly
deny
switched
bail? Like, how can they do that to somebody?
They said she was a flight risk, that she had saved
right.
up money,
oh,
that the
I
reason
see.
She'd learned Arabic was that she actually wanted to join a terrorist organization.
Right.
They really did these very traumatic
and I saw
things.
That they, like, read in her diaries that
yeah.
she had written, like, sort of Islamic sympathetic
yes.
stuff.
So they really mined all that. And then, so then she, at the in, like, a couple months before she would have gone to trial, switched her plea and said, because she could have faced up to 10 years and she was really struggling in prison and
mm-hmm.
felt like, as I understand it from what her mom said, that it was safer to just take the shorter time and know there was a definite end date. So she got a 5-year sentence, which is considered record breaking for the Espionage Act, like for actually being charged under it. Like it's the most ever given.
Really?
But at that point she'd served 1.5 years and now she's served 2.5, you know, so she's got like 2+
okay.
left.
And what she, and the information that she leaked.
Right. I mean, it's in the Mueller report. They
right.
reference it.
It's, I mean, it was actually like something to help
right.
the nation.
Right. It's
in
really,
terms of
I mean,
being
it literally
like
still
are,
like almost confuses my mind.
Would there have been,
an appropriate avenue for her to
That's the great question. I mean, yes, when you talk to sort of certain, like, U.S. attorneys, I actually met one in Ann Arbor a couple weeks ago, and I asked, this is always the question, like, if you see this and you're in that position, and at this moment, there are so many civilians with high-level security because of the military-industrial complex at this point. So they are like, you're supposed to run it up the flagpole. But as they will even tell you, that usually does not do anything. But she did not do that. And you can, there are some editorials and op-eds that actually are pretty intelligently written by like whistleblower or leaker lawyers that are like, this is what she could have done.
Right.
So there is, you know what I mean? But,
right. Yeah. But she was just like, just send it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think just like that, right? She was like, I'll just send it.
She might have been.
I have a hard time picturing her being that like chill. I can't imagine.
No, I know. She's real fascinating.
She seemed to understand what she was doing.
Yes.
To a certain extent. I also don't think she set out to be the martyr serving all the, like,
right,
at this time.
She would have been caught.
I think it was a very idealistic, yeah. I don't think she thought she was going to be caught, right, and that this book would be thrown at her like this.
I mean, it's really great. It's interesting that she's this, like, lives in Georgia. She has three guns at home. One of them is pink, and she hated Donald Trump.
Right.
I was like, cool.
That person exists. That totally. It makes me, and really cared about our country. That is the part that was fascinating to me because I feel no connection.
Because I remember when I first read the story of being this thing about reality, you know, like how can we have more reality? You know, I remember I felt like all of those sentences kept happening as I read the story back when it broke. And
yeah.
It is this thing. And I think then that's what's again so great about the piece, Tina, is that it holds her material without going into these zones of indulgence.
Right.
I mean, you are using this material in some way or for some gain. It actually feels about it's an interesting thing of thinking about journalistic theater.
Right. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, of course, there are nuances to this, but we really do try to, as neutrally as possible, mm-hmm, these are the words that happened in order that day.
Mm-hmm.
Put those on the stage. I mean, you know what I mean? There's a bunch of choices made around that, but we're trying not to actually push too much. Just like, this is what was said. Because it's kind of incredible at that level.
I do want to talk about the choreography of this mantra.
Yeah.
How?
But also, like, where did the choreography for the whole show come from?
Okay.
Did you make it?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I mean, which one should I? That's not
mine first.
Just Emily.
Did that happen one day in rehearsal? And you're like,
even saw it happen in rehearsal. And then all the time at the kitchen, I don't think I ever saw it. And then people started talking about it. Like, I was sitting with Emily. We were getting interviewed by some really cool lady reporter from Die Spiegel or that German magazine.
Sure, that sounds right.
And she's like, how do you do that brilliant snot drip? And Emily's just a very shy-ish person, very actor-driven, doesn't really want to talk about too much what's up, actually.
Mm-mm.
And was like, I was like, oh my God, Emily's going to be so horrified. But we both just were like, she's like, it's just so incredible. And I was like, oh. And then everyone, and I didn't really realize because it happened so upstage. And I, by that point, was watching, like, basically from the booth. And so now, I don't know, when Emily and I started that stuff,
You could describe for the listeners what you're talking about.
It's a very intense part. So reality for the majority of the play keeps lying to the agents. And that's not a spoiler. I mean, I think it's kind of incredible to watch it unfold. She straight up and repeatedly finds ways to say, try to not lie, but deny that she did it. And then they really have run the ropes. They really are pushing her. They're saying, like, what if we told you this? They're saying facts that are true. And she's just literally in this pressure moment. She starts to get really worked up. And however Emily comes to play that, I think it's really just what happens. I don't think Emily is summoning that, although maybe she is now.
I asked Emily about it.
Yeah, what did she say?
It's the energy of them.
Yeah.
Of them
interrogating
her.
It's her body.
And it's where they're positioned around her, and their energy, like, pushes her to contract, and then it comes out. Because I was like, I can cry on cue, but I don't know that I could do that.
Right, and that's what, I don't know, I'm talking about, but I like, and then I'm just curious, as with you all make work, that's something I don't even want to talk to Emily about. Do you know what I mean? I just, because sometimes when you talk about things, then they get noted, and that snot drip has become this weird magic thing.
I mean, well, the thing is, I have only in my work worked with one actor. Okay. Everyone else has been dancers.
Right,
first.
Which is really quite different.
And
right?
So that is real, because I also think there's something to, you're going to do this thing.
Right.
And then what's not discussed is the emotions, but right. the form is discussed.
Right, right, right. Totally.
And then they get to play inside of the emotional yeah. content. So it's not this thing of, I didn't want to ask Emily about how are you feeling.
Right.
I just want to talk about the form.
Right. Yeah, no, and I give pretty specific notes, but then that one I just am like, let's just, I don't want her to think that I'm...
Well, everyone in the world is going to keep talking to her about it.
It's quite
amazing. And what she is doing, it is really coming for her from an acting place. I mean, I think, and that is the thing that's
right.
exciting, you know, yeah. in terms
I mean,
of watching
that, yes, then when you can see a really exciting, really good acting that is not pushed screaming... Right. I always am like, God damn it, I do like theater.
Right.
I do like acting, but it's, yeah.
So speak about the choreography.
Yes.
And your relationship to choreography.
So it's so funny because I call it staging, but I'm like, I know it's choreographic.
Right.
Because I'm not a choreographer, but.
But we could also call it blocking.
Right. That term I also.
It feels like it becomes, it sort of crosses the line into choreography in this situation, because it's not like there's no furniture, there's no there's no walls. It's not like, oh, go to this chair and then you're gonna pick up a cup off the table. It's not like that. It's really
totally
abstract.
Yeah. And that's so that you're speaking exactly to what were these earliest instincts for me about the piece, even in those weeks when we were reading it and then in the kitchen I was like, I think this is a show I wanna do in January. So then we're like, okay, it's getting real that this is gonna live in live space. And I was talking to Parker Lutz, the set designer, that winter of 2018 before it premiered. And I was like, I know that there's no set. I just want to, and I think I had never done work like this with audience on either side, but I'm like, I am having an instinct there's audience on either side, or we should try that. And that, those were coming from like this idea that this was this conversation in space, that really what was the drama and the interesting thing was that these words were said back and forth to each other over this hour. And like that, so whatever way you most could highlight that was what was like very instinctual to me. And then, and that there'd be no set, we wouldn't have like a kitchen or anything like that. And then when we finally got in the rehearsal room, and I had some ideas of these stage pictures so loosely, and then I had just got in the room and it was just about making energy and tension.
Right.
Like, and then painstakingly, I'd have an idea and we'd all try it. And then, I mean, I've talked about this a bit, but after a couple weeks, once we were fully cast and really rehearsing of this in the fall of 2018, then we also would start to know when this abstracted thing was working. You know what I mean? We'd try maybe Pete go that way, and then we'd try it, and then we'd all be like, yeah, that didn't work. We'd have, you know, that magic of when you're sharing the logic that is totally abstracted the world you've made in that room and for that piece. And just some of the hardest part for me to get and was what we call act two. Once they've taken her into the house, the sound goes away. That, because she really was taken to this tiny, tiny room at the room she says she doesn't want to go into. And just keeping that part where they repetitively ask things was like really hard. And still I'm like always like, ugh. But
still after how many, because it's had a fairly, it's run a bit.
Right, and we were touring it recently. But yeah, so that, it was just this logic of energy and tension and something, and then of course the things that happen in the room, like especially with Becca, like they walked in eating a sandwich in rehearsal that day, and it's like, oh my God, obviously that agent walks in. It can't be a sandwich. Let's get a disgusting power bar. But adds this, if you happen to see it, this great little detail of gearing up for the day casually. And
the final prop that she holds is
this dog toy.
Uh-huh.
People tried to, close to the project, tried to keep that off the stage.
Huh.
But I really... honestly, there was a point in time where I thought the show would end with a song. I mean, very bad ideas. Very downtown ideas were in the mix early on. But really, very quickly, once we were in the final, 2 months of rehearsals, this is becoming this very like, sharp, simple thing.
I have frequently been like, oh, it'll end with, remember in Rumble Ghost when I was like, and I'll sing this song?
Right?
And I went to, like, sing a song at the end of Rumble Ghost, and my dramaturg, Joshua Lubin-Levy, as soon as I began, went, no. As soon as I started singing,
what
was like,
song
no.
were you going to sing?
You were there. You were all in the room. I was something to what Calder had written. And what? It was because there was this thing about Rumble Ghost was like my most play.
I love that title.
I feel like, and the opening is you think you're watching Poltergeist, and the second part you realize it's all just been a group therapy
session.
That's
really cool.
And then people are talking about their inner child, mm-hmm. and it's this idea that Carol Ann's the inner child, and that's right. what's been missing. And at the end, it was supposed to end with my inner child, which I chose to not have. But I was at one point going to sing a song as the inner child.
Oh my God.
And
with
I remember,
words?
I was like, I love, you know, it was like a high
oh,
thing.
No.
And that's, and Josh Lubin-Levy was like, no, right away. And I was like, you're right. We immediately were like, no. But the choice to end with a song.
You could
always
sing a song at the end of Meet, MacArthur Park.
I sang MacArthur Park, but that's different. That's Donna Summer. And I also believe that is what Lisa Nowak was listening to on her drive.
Right. It's really dramaturgical.
It was dramaturgical to have Donna Summer in there.
Yeah. So there was all these ideas.
What was the song going to be? So I want to know what was the song going to be.
The song that plays at the curtain call is this original song that Sanaa Yamada, who did all the composing for the show, I'd asked her to write like a pop song for reality with this idea that maybe it would be sung or, you know, Pete Simpson's actually this incredible drummer.
So for those who don't know, I mean, I know Pete from having acted with him as a kid and doing very physical, I was like 18, but like very physical commedia theater. And then I met Pete years later, who was in the Blue Man Group.
Oh, right.
Still is.
Still.
That is like his day job.
That is.
It's like he can't quit it. He's got a family. And
yeah.
So he puts on a bald cap.
Totally. He's one of the original, like one of the earliest people.
Yeah. Wow. It's wild. I love Pete so much.
He's very fascinating and all heart. And yeah, he's a great person.
Yeah. So he can play the drums.
Yeah. Wow. So there was this idea. So that song, so she wrote it and it's called Pretty Paper, which like, which is like when reality says, I use pretty paper. There's this line. But so then that we really quickly knew that probably wasn't going to happen. And then
did it ever? Did you ever try it?
No, we never even tried it.
Because God, I really want to see Emily.
I think the ends well.
Yeah, but that was
really good.
Then Parker
you did it.
Had this crazy dress. It's actually what I'm wearing in my author picture. But there was an idea that maybe Emily changed and came back on stage in this incredible dress.
I know all these choices deeply. Like I really
and
relate
then it was obviously super. One day we actually shoved Emily into that dress, made her zip into it. She was very uncomfortable. It was really clear. Also, that was wrong. But I had some thought that made me think there's something on the stage at the end. And because compared to other house straddle work, which I'm excited by, this is so not colorful. Normally, there's a nail color palette for every show. It's this
fingernail?
Yeah. Like there's full, you know, they're usually truly very femmy, kind of queered worlds, but from a very female version of like that. And like there's a lot of like, just they're like, this is so different in a certain way, although I can talk about the through line, but I think there was also a way of this little, like, Parker actually was like, Tina, don't let that go on the stage. My first, but I just, it's also this weird magic. And now for me, it works like how weird that day was. Like, was that on in the room? I don't know. It's just a little weird touch.
It also brings up this thing that her dog is locked up.
Yes.
In the back.
Dog is really heartbreaking. It's somehow through the whole thing.
I mean, because she really, and I will say in the letter Reality wrote back to Emily, she said, the only thing I cared about that day was those animals. And I tried to stay really calm so that nothing would happen to them. Which is,
and
like,
that tension inside of it, and that it's coming from that. It was so when she picks up this dog toy at the end, I was like,
oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, it really worked for me.
It feels like a good little weird detail.
It really works.
Amazon, the first one we ordered wasn't the right color. So I literally was like, and we're ordering another one. This is the color I want.
I mean, these things are important. They really are. The devil's in the details.
The devil's in the details.
It's really true.
Yeah.
And what is the, because you're someone who has made a lot of work, and this is now off-Broadway.
Right.
It's the first time for you in that arena.
Yes.
How's that been?
It's been really interesting.
Yeah.
And it's been, I mean, I think I will never know if it was me moving into this, or, like, it was hard. It's been hard, and I'm, like, The Vineyard's amazing. I'm so grateful to be there. But it's a bit of a culture clash. And we were like, in a tiny bit of a way. And I think we also like came in as a company overall. Like, we weren't fully brought in as a company, but overall we brought people that were on the show before. Right. And many of us have worked together in total downtown ways.
Right.
So there are literally a lot of like, we'd be like, why don't, they're just doing that because they always do it that way. And then I'd be like, no, but we're also mad because we always do it our way. Right. You know what I mean? So it was just like, but it turns out that like, it just putting a show on stage is not, there's just a lot to that. And I think in a bigger institution, there's a lot more to that.
Well, and when the subscription audience enters into the ring of it, and also this sort of thing of how have we educated our audiences to view work in this way. I mean, I think it's a real, because it's what's so wild about the difference between the kitchen
and it's, it's totally wild how different theater. It is. And we were deep, deep downtowners, you know what I mean? But very excited for this. I was like, I had wanted an opportunity like this. I was super curious.
Yeah.
And then it's actually really moving how they treat their subscription audience, who are literally some of the oldest human beings I've seen walking.
Well, until like, unless you go see, theater or, and in dance places that are subscription audience. That it is a thing of, and I think that is part of it too, of how are we educating everyone, not viewing that as not just an age thing.
Totally. And that's why I really, it was really cool they took this show
Elderly had a good reaction to the show?
I think so. I mean, I'm sure there are some who have not. But, I mean, you know how you can feel stuff. I was so surprised. Those first couple of weeks of previews were a majority of the audience was the very old total subscribers are going to come out, whatever the Vineyard has programmed, not necessarily interested in us or this work or know anything about us or the work at all. And you could feel them want, like, that's what I sort of learned about some of the subscription audience. And I don't know if this, that they will lean into it and want to like understand and take it at face value. Mm. Like, what should I get out of this? Or am I getting out of this? Which I actually think is interesting compared to some of the little bit of like, prove it downtown thing at times. You know what I mean?
I think it's once categorical thinking enters into the picture, it's difficult regardless of where anyone falls in the matrix of human life.
Right.
And it is this thing of this is that and that is this. And then it's really hard to view anything in there.
Right.
So downtown can certainly have that in terms of where we position ourselves theoretically, politically, ideologically, all of these things. But that's also obviously the same in a subscription audience that is like, I'm coming to be entertained.
Right.
Or, you know, I view it as solely for my own entertainment.
Right.
You know, that I'm not looking to learn, be moved, this should have efficacy. And I think that is really interesting.
But I think you're making me realize something it's just been such a head down thing there of getting the show in there. But like with the Vineyard, because they've really positioned it as political theater, which it is, and I'm happy for that. I think in part of that was because it maybe wasn't going to just entertain. Like, it was going to potentially be a hard hour for someone who's used to a joke a minute.
It is.
And, like, someone leaning on a
thing. Well, and as someone who has, seen...
Right.
I mean, I had a stretch where I went to see just a bunch of theater.
Right.
Instead of
just
instead
to take
of
it all in.
Anything, really. And it was really, it's been interesting for me to see plays that are like plays and a real like theater, like it just, I can't.
I do not see as much as I should see considering I situate myself in this world at all. I'm much more interested in visual art, like as an influence, and just always have been. And then I'm like, lazy and picky and poor. So I have, but I'm trying to, I mean, I've seen more lately. I just saw something though that was so great, and especially in terms of the acting that like is giving me a lot of thoughts about, like, I don't know if it's like an American thing or something. I saw that, I don't know, when, What if they went to Moscow?
Oh, right. At BAM. BAM,
which was Brazilian people. And these three actresses were so good. And I was like, I really was saying the closest.
It was based on Three Sisters.
Yes. And they just go in at the sisters. They cut everyone else away practically. Good. I mean, there's a lot to say about it, and I won't take up time on that with no one here seen it.
It's also, I knew some about it.
But this acting. I said it was the closest thing I know to this happening right now is Emily. Like that, because I've seen several big shows lately, and I know those actors are good. When Broadway shows, I know they're good actors, actually. But we're pumping up this idiom here directorially that is the louder deliveries, mm-hmm. or this bigger edge we have to give, mm-hmm. and it totally takes me out of mm-hmm. almost it all can. Shows, or it can, unless it's so well done that becomes it.
Right.
But seeing these three incredible actresses, and a part of it was interacting with the audience, but then with each. So simple and so good. It was just like...
Well, and they were also... But weren't they also using live feed in this?
Yes, but also like...
Because I feel that can always help in terms of film performance.
Well, no, there was two things. You watched the play live and then watched the movie. You literally went to a different location and watched it projected. Uh-huh. They repeat it. Uh-huh. Or I actually went with Jess and we saw the movie first and then the live one.
Uh-huh. The movie of the performance.
Yeah, they live edit into... From Fisher, they live edit into the Peter J. Sharp, one of the cinemas there, what's happening live.
And then you went and watched it live.
Yes. And I know this sounds very gimmicky, but I really will say it was so unsurprisingly not because of the integrity, the acting, and this overall almost old-fashioned simplicity put onto this thing that I know sounds very kind of known what the tropes they're up to are. But
I
didn't, it was interesting.
I don't know that I felt the tropes were known. I really only thought about it in terms of an actor. Of like, once a camera's on me, I can really like, hopefully.
Right.
Enter into a zone of not
maybe that,
pushing.
Maybe you're actually really right, Jack.
But I know many people who loved this show. Right. And yet another show I wish I would have seen.
Did you get to pick your own adventure? Like, you're like, I want to see a movie and then play.
Depending on what time you chose, like, certain show, like, we just happened to, the last one we could go to, you went to the movie first. Mm-hmm. Which I was actually really glad that is what happened. Mm-hmm. And it was durational. Like, I got a little bored in the second because I'm like, I saw this already. but then it would come back. Like, there would just be a really great gift of acting. Or something would happen that you hadn't seen in the edit. And then overall, we were like, we are so
glad.
How long
was each time?
About an hour and a half.
Each. Okay.
Yeah. Each. Maybe not quite.
So you were there for like 4 hours?
It was definitely durational. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, and we were like, maybe we'll sneak out.
Yeah.
Like maybe we'll just try.
And you were like, no, I want to go see this live now. And you did.
But at the end, we were both like, really, that was just special.
No, I'd also.
Seeing so much I don't love.
But I'm also just like, but that's like not theater. Like it is in this way. I'm talking about plays where they're really, well, not even, like I saw this, this play, and it was just this, you know, this two-hander and this endless talking and even monologuing at the audience, but in this way that felt so, like, just, it made me sick.
But a certain audience members
so
are loving it, right?
Oh, they loved it. It was super white and straight and like super like so straight. It made me just not want to talk to straight people for like a week after watching it. I felt so kind of enraged by the whole process of it.
We've read Richard Foreman's Unbalancing Acts. I know it's old news.
Right.
But
right.
It remains the text to me because he literally is like, this is socialized to us. This is A, how people act and act on stage. And we've literally been programmed to think like in his whole work, he's like, literally my work is to deprogram that.
Yes.
I think I grew up not seeing very much theater and like not going to plays. And so when I go to plays, I'm instantly like, what are you doing? Uh-huh. Like, I can't believe
it. But also you just have instincts, I would argue. Like, you know.
He does. Well, also he really comes from dance, but also comes from like a huge canon of dance. I mean, we're going to talk about like ballet to Rebecca Paddock and beyond.
Right.
Like it's like your, like Reed's knowledge of dance that has also traversed so much text.
Right.
Also
right.
My pieces have had like 30 page scripts inside of them that I've written.
Right.
So Reed has dealt with theater via performance art and choreography.
Very specifically,
and so, which is so much about how to use theater to wake you up to the bizarreness of life.
Or like to truly queer it. Yes. Like to queer life. Like in an old-fashioned definition of that word.
Yeah. So that you can...
Coming back to you saying like watching straight in a really way, that's what... And they've really doubled down on it in the last year and a half. Like straight theater has really...
They're like, I won't let you get away with it. Which is what was so exciting about Slave Play for me. Like, and then going to see Slave Play and being like, oh, which is getting like every single great review, which is great because I'm working on Jeremy's next one. So I may everyone come see it. But it's really this, it did feel like, oh my God, I can breathe up in here instead of feeling like this wet, hideous, straight white blanket getting thrown on me where they're like, no, people talk like this. And I'm like, who?
Were there people in the audience going,
Yes. And drinking out of their wine sippy cups. And being, and what was amazing was people being like, I like some of the dumbest jokes. And then being on their phone in the next breath, fully sending an email. Wow. Like from the audience being like, and then their phone's out and they're like, I don't know that I want lobster. You know, like, you know, what they're writing in the audience is more interesting than what's going on upstage because you're like, actually, this is cruelty.
Right.
Like, if you want to talk about brutalism and the fucked up things people do, look at your audience. Because look at how they're watching this story and, like, go in there, like, and canvas that. I think that's also the thing that is, that I've always, you know, I don't want to just... It is this thing of, like, pods. Like, people are in pods, and then they sort of siphon in, and now they're in this new pod and in their theater seat, and everything happens how they expect, and then they get in another pod. That's the cab, and then, you know, it's like,
the pod people!
And that's the cab.
And that's the cab.
And another pod, that's the elevator.
And their apartment, which is another pod.
Another pod. Shower, it's a pod.
It was a bad metaphor, but I was basically talking about pod people and this feeling of, I want things to wake me up, not put me to sleep.
Right.
And I feel like if an audience is kind of, feels fine to, like, get on their phone, laugh some at your show, not pay attention to it, give you a standing ovation because that's societally what seems appropriate.
Right.
I'm like, well, then they were asleep.
Right. It's just such a different kind of art exchange. Mm-hmm. Than,
well, yeah. It's literally like, well, I'd rather watch TV. I think also being not feeling like you have the I don't have the money to go and pay to see a ton of things. So then it's like, and there is such great film and television content.
Totally.
And so if live art's like, well, how do we get people out of their homes? It's like, something.
I wonder sometimes, like, should I go see more plays so I, like, understand and know how to talk about it and, like, learn something about theater? But then I'm like, do I want to go see Laurie Metcalf yell at me for 2 hours? You know what I mean? For which she'll win a Tony. You know what I mean?
My sense is you wouldn't.
Right.
I like
Laurie Metcalf, but I know I know what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
One of the disappointments for me in theater is the thing about devil is in the details. Most 80 to 97% of theater happening outside of downtown and maybe much of it doesn't care about details. And it's just, it's a taste thing. I just want to see really cool lighting and like it's and formal shit. It's just like it's gonna make me more relaxed and I'm gonna like it and then it can happen in there and that just doesn't. So for me, that's one of the pleasures, and it's not a value system.
Well, and I think it's
commercial
also
theater.
It's also interesting to think about like what makes you feel relaxed, or because it's this thing of when I'm in something that's super. Where I know that what's going to happen as soon as it begins, and that not only do I know what's going to happen, but this isn't, we just talked about a movie where I figured out immediately what was going to happen, and then it all came to pass, but I still really enjoyed the movie.
Right.
On stage, it's a thing of like, I'm trapped here, and I can figure it out generally the first 5 minutes, and then I'm like, oh my God. My God. And now it's going to keep happening.
Right.
And everything happens exactly how I think, too, where it's like, and then, you know, you're like, oh, a slow fade's going to happen in a moment. And then it happens, and I want to be like,
you know exactly what's going to happen story wise, but you don't know at all what's going to happen.
Right. Oh, with Tina's? Right. Yeah. Is this a room? Sure. Yeah, but you don't know at all what's going to happen because of the details.
The details and the
from
gift
the
of that
to design.
Text. I mean, because it sort of does keep surprising you.
What was it like to use just full source text instead of having written your own?
It was great. I mean, I love constraints, and that
saves
was
time.
Like the most. It totally saves time. Totally. That was why we did that show in the end. Four actors, written script. But I liked the constraint too that we had.
Four actors,
written script.
Let's get super honest with what it takes. We still raised a ton of money for the first one.
Right.
But yeah, I loved that was a constraint. I mean, early on, we did think, I was like, there's no way we'll be able to keep all of this. We really thought we were going to have to do cuts to parts of it, like, because it was so repetitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have old scripts where this is the section, like, we would try not doing it. Mm. But then the more we worked on it, the more it was cast with those particular actors. It was like, nope, let's try to make all of this hold. Because it felt like there was information in every little sentence that was helpful.
Yeah.
So, but then Emily's the one who referred to it this. We did a talk back in Philly a couple weeks ago. Someone asked a question like this, and she was like, we treat it like a canonical text, like it's Shakespeare. Like, what is on the page is really what has driven this project. Like, not a ton of outside research besides some of the terms. We're not like I didn't look up like interrogation techniques. We just, what did that page tell us, like, for the kinetics and the feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tina, we didn't learn anything about your life. Like, we just learned about your work, but where are you from?
New Hampshire.
Did you have a happy childhood?
Medium.
Did you go to high school in New Hampshire?
Yes, public high school.
And then college
really
somewhere?
Small. Then I went to college undergrad in Maine, Bowdoin College.
This is very New England.
Very New England. 1980s New England.
Do you have siblings?
I have a younger sister.
Wait, did you do an MFA?
I have an MA from Reed College in liberal studies. Uh-huh. And then I went to Brooklyn College and I completed my stuff that you do with Mac, but I never graduated.
With Mac?
The Brooklyn College MFA playwriting program.
Wellman? Wellman. I literally couldn't do it, and I was in Murder of Crows.
Really?
And I literally was like, Mac Wilson. Yeah. Mac Wellman. Yeah. You went to Brooklyn, wait, and you didn't, what, you
I
did
never
everything?
Finished, because I had a 40-hour week job, and I started making work really easy, like soon, not easily.
And I started making, I had a 40-hour week job, and I was making work
and
really easily.
I have a master's, so it's like, I'm sorry, I don't need to go
here's
out.
Here's how you do it. You take a transcript.
Yeah. So, yeah, but yeah, no, I mean, total New England is, I feel like, a big part of my
life. I mean, when are you going to do your Emily Dickinson piece?
Oh, I'm obsessed with her.
I knew it.
But she's someone I almost, like, have you read the big biography? There's one amazing biography I got. I wove her into a play. In 2015, I made a play at the Kitchen called Ancient Lives, and I wove some Emily Dickinson into that, some Susan Howe. It's, like, about this group of teenage girls, one of them marries her female teacher and they all go to the woods to set up a TV station to, like, broadcast a feminist cult out of the woods. It's also based loosely on Pump Up the Volume. And Jess Barbagallo played the Christian Slater, who was a witch warlock who lived in the woods.
Emily, the only kind of theater to go to.
Emily Davis played the student who, and the teacher was Lucy Taylor, who takes them to the woods and then... Anyways, but I wove some Emily Dickinson in there. You know, she's almost like, I don't want to do a full thing with her. It should stay kind of where it is to me.
She's one of my favorite quotes, which is zero to the bone.
It's
to really like how to edit your work.
Yeah. Totally obsessed with her, as many are. But she's like probably one of the best people to ever, artistically to come out of time ever.
Besides me, screamed Tina Satter. With her in her Dalmatian skin shirt.
This is a little bit Emily.
Puff sleeves.
Yes, it is.
Puff sleeves.
And then you started making work.
I mean, I'm a late bloomer in many things in my life, but I, like, through all of that New England stuff, I just was, like, a field hockey player. Like, I was a total, like, New England jock person who thought, that I would finish Bowdoin, teach English at a private school, and coach field hockey. Like, I thought that was
so sad.
Gonna be my life.
Yeah. Is it? No, it's honest.
It was just not for me. I mean, I really, that was like, I was like really aiming to do that.
I think that's definitely transcript material.
So sad. Is it? No, it's honest.
Like, answering
herself, checking our silent, you know, Jeremy for like
it's
what's morally
though,
correct.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Room tone.
Yeah, yeah. Jeremy is room tone. Yay.
That's true.
It is really
That's
true.
That's true.
It's true.
Wow, so it was about the truth.
So then you were...
Oh, yeah. So, and then I moved... After Bowdoin, I moved to Portland, Oregon, and was just, like, living life. I thought I wanted to be, like, a writer. Like, I'd been an English major. I thought I wanted to be, like, a journalist or something, but... And I'd done this, like... My town is so small that I'm from. It's, like, 5,000 people total, like...
I'm from 2,500.
Really? Where are you from?
Prairie to Sac, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Where
so
is the name of your town?
Hopkinton.
I mean.
Yeah. Like, my public school, my graduating class was 40 people.
Uh-huh.
Like, right, so, like, right, tiny. Right, right. But anyways, I moved to Portland, Oregon. Oh, I'd done this little acting thing when I was little, but I, like, there wasn't my babysitter ran, like, this kind of cool acting thing when I was really little. It's hard to explain.
Experimental theater in Hopkinton.
Very seminal.
It probably is,
but
I have
like,
to say.
Yeah,
like, children's theater is pretty experimental. When you go back and to children's
totally.
Theater, you're
and
like...
We would write our own plays. Right. Like, me and my friends from that time do have a laugh when we look at those right. scripts and stuff. But it probably actually was very seminal. But then I didn't do anything in high school because that was all musical theater. Mm-hmm. I can't sing, wasn't into it. And then... But at Bowdoin, my mom would always go, you love theater. And I was like, Mom, it's for nerds. Because all I was into was drinking and playing field hockey
yes.
and lacrosse. But then this, like in Portland, the West Coast opened my brain up again. I took an acting class, like on a weird whim. I'm such a bad actor, but I was, you know, the best one in my class kind of thing. like I'm not good.
That's good
but
for
I
your
was
ego.
Clearly, it was at the time
yeah.
very exciting. Like, I'm
it's
young. I'm in
the
acting
best
class.
In a class of terrible people.
but anyways, that slowly led. I ended up working with a cool company there. They cast me in this crazy version of Blood Wedding. But then...
Who were you?
I was a very small part, and we were all double cast.
Uh-huh.
So in Blackout, like... I would switch roles uh-huh. with the other. I forget, yeah. but I do love Lorca. I mean, that is amazing.
I play at the Moon.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a real,
really
that
beautiful
was a real
piece,
big,
actually. Yeah.
That monologue really changed a lot for me, actually.
Because
I did it in a
good.
Meisner class.
Really?
And he broke me down in this way that it changed things.
Oh, wow.
Anyhow.
That's super interesting. No. But then this was a very seminal moment because this, well, the company's called Imago Theater. I think they're still out there. It's a couple. But, I was like this actor. I had no big theater background at all. Like I'd seen some things in Boston with my family growing up, but they started talking about they were going to travel to Seattle to see the Worcester Group.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so enthralled with these people. I was doing this thing. Where I was like, look up the Worcester Group. Maybe I didn't even look on a computer. I don't know where I looked.
Right.
It was 1876.
Right.
So I somehow learned about the Worcester Group and then they were the first people they were really into Foreman, so I ordered them balancing acts. I can remember getting that. And that, so with no theater background, I started getting deeply influenced. And then I really remember them being like, there's this young, up-and-coming person named Richard Maxwell.
Oh, my God.
And they're out, you know, they're already provincially out in Portland, and but they're very interested in these New York experimentalists. So that got really
I also saw one of Rich's first pieces, because
imagine.
I was at apprentice at Williamstown in 97.
Okay.
So, and Rich did this piece called The Burger King.
Oh, I read it. I love those plays.
Yeah. It was so, but I saw it in like a room.
That's really crazy.
In a weird building in Williams, Mass.
Yeah.
It was so.
I was just talking about that play.
The Burger King. And Jim Stanley, I believe, played The Burger King.
Jim Stanley's a phenomenal actor.
I love Jim Stanley and I've worked with him as well.
He was one, we were trying to get him in on, to be an agent really early. And there was no.
I mean, National Theatre of the United States of America had a couple pieces that blew my fucking mind.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, they were up to really interesting stuff, truly experimenting.
Yeah. I grew up, like, knowing James and Yehuda and, like, all of those.
And the design of some of that stuff is really special.
Incredible.
There's nothing but since or before
this
looked like
that.
Did you
see this? So years and years ago, I'm going to tell Reed about this piece, which maybe you saw. It was at this small Shoshama space where it was this tiniest little, like, perfect round, you know, half round stage at the Lip. Like, you came and sat in this weird space. It had theater lights at the edge of it. It was like 2 feet deep. And it began by Yehuda, like, falling down in, like, with this thing tied around him, and he was upside down. And it was like him talking to this other guy, and they were lit weird. And you were like, what is this? And then all of a sudden the rope broke, he fell down, and they ran through the back wall, and it went on forever down a long hall.
Oh my God.
The wall collapsed, which you couldn't, it was lit so well you didn't realize it was just like paper or whatever.
Oh my God.
It collapsed and went down a long hall with all these doors, and you were on a cruise ship. And I was like, I saw it.
That's incredible.
I was like an angry early 20 something. I saw this piece at least 3 times, dragged people to it. I was like, you won't believe it. I couldn't. And then there were dance numbers that happened. They did a whole, like, cruise ship door opening, door closing. I couldn't believe the dance numbers. There was a woman in it who I wish I knew who. I can't remember her name. She's one of the best performers I've ever seen in my entire life. Actor,
who
dancer, anything.
It?
I'll have to figure it out. And there was a section where in the very back, it was so wild. They had a... She stood somewhere and they faced a mirror at her. And so you thought you were looking at her, but what you were seeing was the mirror, and they could shake the mirror. And you were like, what's happening? And so she was standing in the back smoking, and you would just see her being like you would see this thing like ripple, but it looked as if it could be her doing that. And you couldn't. Their ability to confuse your eye. Cause I remember James, we were doing this play together, like a play, and we were on the train going to Connecticut, because that's where it was, and he's like, I'm doing a play, and I was like, oh my God. He's like, I'm working on the script. And I said, how many pages in it? And he said 17. And I was like, what do you mean? I couldn't wrap my mind or anything. I was like, how long will you? He was like, probably like an hour and a half. I was like, what? And he's like, well, things are gonna happen,
right?
It was these, right. I mean,
well,
but
now
they
run the Museum of Illusions on 14th Street.
Wouldn't that be an amazing turn? Oh, man. Do you know what you're doing next? Speaking of next.
No, I don't totally know. I mean, there's actually a bunch more touring on Is This a Room? In the U.S. and internationally over the next year. For the producer for my tour is Mayin Wang.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have like an agent who's like my more normal kind of thing, Rachel Viola, who's great. We're such a small thing. Like, this has always been a little bit with Hofstadter, like our momentum always outpaces our internal logistics. So it's just in a certain, not always, but like, so we have all this exciting touring, but it's so much work.
Right.
Like, and I'm
like,
actually,
oh my God, we're traveling. How do you travel?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, so Mayin, obviously, but and we have a team to help with that. But this was really. I'm not even making excuses. I've just been so deep in Is This a Room, having no idea, truly, as one doesn't, that when we did it at the kitchen, it would have this life. And really, the last 4 or 5 months getting in and at the Vineyard has been pretty all-consuming. And
in that time,
we went to Europe. And a little bit of U.S. with it. So, no, I'm trying to get my head out and, like, think about what could and should be next. Because
I'm not up for doing... For you, you don't have to do anything next. I'm just curious.
No.
I didn't mean that in a capitalist way.
No.
And what's next,
but you
Tina?
Know what?
Well, after your exciting run at the Vineyard Theater, we're all wondering, what's next? And it's like, well, I did just work. I just killed myself in the last 3 years.
I know,
but I said, what's next?
It's so capitalist. That
So I didn't mean it that way.
No.
Like, what about a trip or laying
trip.
Down? Or
are you watching TV?
I am watching TV.
That's important to us.
Yeah.
We love TV and films.
I have really embarrassing taste for TV.
Because
I have such
that.
High anxiety.
Relatable.
But it's like really how I treat it was like watching Sex and the City over and over and over and over.
That's fine. That's is fine. It? Yes, it is.
Like, that is
Jeremy is watching a show called The Watchmen, which is on HBO, and it looks incredible. And I had to watch part of it from behind that door over there last night because I was feeling kind of anxious. And I was like, I love the number. I generally rewatch. I'm a rewatcher. Right. And I think that's a hallmark of being a director.
It totally is.
The number of times I could go there's movies. I could do the whole movie for you right now.
It's so a director because And then lately for my new relaxation the past week has been Schitt's Creek. I mean,
It's great.
There's nothing stressful about it. They make me laugh. Today.
You're one of the family members.
Moira Rose is so amazing.
Iconic.
She says she couldn't answer the phone one time because she just had her eyelids glued on. And she's like, everything is cloudy. It's like my favorite. I have a meme that I made. I'll send it to you.
My favorite Myra is just I can't remember what all of them are, but just like there's simply things you cannot do. Like you can't smoke in a car with a baby unless the window's rolled down like that. unless you cracked a window.
They're offering the part, like she's getting offered the role and the crows don't have eyes. She gets an email, it's like 40-something G4C. She's like, I can do that. Like, everything she does.
Yeah, it's really, her audition for when she scats for her audition for the female singers.
Yeah.
It's really good. But da-da-da with her egg shaker.
When
it's
she
really,
sings, oh my God, Danny Boy. Why does she sing Oh Danny Boy? Is that a funeral or something?
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yes. Yes.
So you're doing some of that. And then, and what about relaxing and taking care of self-care? What's self-care look like these days? rewatching Sex in the City, staying in bed.
No, I don't stay in the bed.
Do you have a pet?
In the bed.
I don't stay in the bed.
Do I have a pet? No, I'd love to have a pet. I'm a very bad pet owner, so.
How do you know until you've had one?
Because she's had five. They're all dead.
I've had some and it hasn't worked out, literally.
Oh, yeah. No.
No, right now I'm not relaxation. It's very hard. I mean, it's like if I can have a drink with friends right now after the shower. Mm. I mean, I'm not trying to be like some martyred, like, I just always work, but.
I just always work. I would have loved if you would have gone, I'm not trying to be some martyred, I just always work. It's just that I just always work.
I just always work, y'all.
I mean, it's a lot to, the producing of avant-garde, like, tip-of-the-arrow work.
Right.
Where you. Because it's like, I've said it on this podcast a million times. Yep. I met with a huge producer who was like,
here we go.
Money walks in
and art walks out.
And it's this thing of like, well, what is it and what's its precedent? What came before? What does it exactly look like?
Right.
So that we can have the same thing over again, you know, and know that our money is safe on a sure bet.
Yeah.
And so I think that thing of like, not only is this content maybe going to be a challenge, but how I'm formally going to give it to you is going to be a challenge for some people. And then, it's a lot. It's a lot to find the infrastructure for that.
100%. Yeah. I mean,
and you're living in this country. This is not a socialized.
No, I mean, I was going to say something earlier about NTUSA. Like, in a different country, they would be like a supported, really cool Polish or Brazilian theater company because they actually were up to such interesting stuff, but they didn't have a space like the Worcester Group.
No.
So. And they can't. It can't stay, and it should have been. That was really important experimental work.
Yeah, they were. They were a company who it should still be happening. Would
have gone all out, but you can't do it. Like
you couldn't.
It's too hard. I mean, those of us that are scraped and still hanging on, it's really hard.
Yeah.
I don't have to teach next semester, so that's like a
Where have
vacation.
You been teaching?
This semester I'm just at NYU. Last year I taught at Hunter MFA playwriting, which I did love.
Oh, great!
Sarah Lawrence. Uh-huh. And NYU.
And NYU. And we both did like a guest drop in at Yale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The guest drop in at Yale. That's where I met Jeremy. Before he was like anything big and was like really like,
the
oh,
most famous.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Within a year was like,
So what are you doing the rest of the day?
I love a question like that.
Oh, my God. Me too. Those are my favorite details of like
a
Those
are the things
life.
You can actually know.
I'm returning something to opening ceremony. Just don't let anyone I close to know that I even bought it in the first place.
Okay.
Then I have to go. I am nominated for an award that I'm sure people here have been nominated for. I've been nominated for it before.
An Obie?
No.
Oh,
this grant.
But I do love
where
the way
you have
you looked
to
at
like
me.
Submit.
Yeah, it's that printed, one in LA.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I am going to pick up one of my plays that got bounded at Kinko's.
Uh-huh. I've done that.
I tried to go print my other work sample yesterday. It was going to cost me $238, yep. So I'm going to go instead buy $80 worth of ink and try to print it myself at home. Then tomorrow go to Kinko's and get it bound.
And what is it that they give you?
$100.
They give you $100 to work on this grant. Pam's been nominated it more than anything.
Don't put this out till after they announce your grant.
I have to release this week, Tina, because I'm promoting your play. This is coming out on Friday.
I'm so grateful to be nominated. Why can't they read a PDF?
Tea, honey, tea. Yeah. The hard copy thing.
Maybe they want to take notes on it.
The hard copy thing. I also
it's a
was like, is this a room? Are you setting that? That's amazing.
But I mean, I've touched it a tiny bit.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what should be in the box.
I changed one of the characters' names.
I remember. Well, and also, I touched all these copies. Enjoy. You're going to get, some of my DNA sample as you read through this. I remember the same thing. Pam's been nominated for this a million times. I've been nominated into this. I was
big choreographer list in their bio that they, as one of their credits, that they've been nominated for this award 6 times. And I was like, that is such bad news that there's validity to listing
that. Pam Tanowitz is one of the most famous choreographers right now, has been nominated for that award numerous times. And I think
I have never
just got it. But I hope you get it. You write out
a
lot of stuff,
though.
And then you send in hard material.
They don't know how much it costs to print stuff. I mean,
they're also in LA. It might be more cheaper there.
Totally.
One time, Harriet and I had an emergency situation where we had to get very high quality prints of these paintings we had done for a presentation in Geneva, and in a mass rush, literally the day before we flew to Geneva, Harriet went to some downtown printers and was like, "I need these printed." It was $650.
Right. It's really
literally for 12 pieces of paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
They looked beautiful. Beautiful.
And did the people in Geneva keep them, and were you able to have them?
No, this is what's amazing. They threatened to not give them back because they were not able to understand that they were not original paintings. We were like, no, we have the original paintings. We could show them to you. These are prints.
Right.
That we photoshopped into this presentation, and they're like, we keep the original drawings. We're like, those are not original, and you have to give that back.
It was $600. Give that
literally,
back.
It took them half a year. They did send it back.
Oh, that's good. Go on.
I'm
what
having
else?
Coffee with Michael Breslin, who's an old friend.
His parents.
I met him. He was an intern on that Ancient Lives, Pump Up the Volume, which play.
I loved his post.
I know,
where
it's really sweet.
I was
He's
mom and you were
really
dad.
He's really smart. I know, that was really made my day.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go to the theater to do some stuff. And
I really love the two of you as Siskel and Ebert for plays.
Oh my
I want
God.
You guys to go to plays together
hilarious.
And then just be filmed.
I'm bad audience.
Talking
though.
About it. It's so good. You guys are it'd be really good. Also because you guys look like Beetlejuice.
We have a lot of opinions.
Tina,
I think we have a lot to offer.
Yeah. We would I would definitely be like, I don't understand why when you had this much money, you couldn't have,
I always try to go in
positive.
But you
also look great together.
I do try to go in positive. Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm a hater.
I do a set aside prayer when I sit down in a seat. Goddess, please help me set aside my opinions of how theater should go while I sit here for the next 90 minutes. And then in the first 2 minutes, I was like, nope, I can't do it. I knew it was going to begin this way with a fade up. And I knew that there was going to be a mattress over there. And I knew she was going to throw herself down onto it when she said, I can't stand living in London anymore.
Together at the recent Brazilian, that really cool Chekhov thing. Uh-huh. But we've gotten some, I don't think he wants to sit next to me anymore, because when I snap, then I just
what happens
snap.
For you?
I'm just like,
sighing.
Are you fucking kidding me? This and
I have
just
an audience.
Whisper
I,
really loudly, and of course, know everyone around us. And Jess is like, Tina, please.
Everyone knows everyone around us.
I was at a showing with Harriet yesterday, and it took all of my willpower to not do so many things. I only turned around to her once to be like.
Well, I also think of funny
terrible.
Things to say, and I want to share them.
I'm a real, finger pusher, where I'll, take a finger, and I'll, stick it into the thigh of the person I'm next to until I can feel their bone. And then I'm like, I've done that. I can't even tell you
Emily Davis and I have a well-honed slight touch when we're at things.
where I can also keep, weirdly, for how Betty Davis expresses my face is, I can keep it at a fierce neutral if I'm seated close to the front of the stage.
It's very
I can
hard,
maintain,
though.
Like, ice, baby. Right. Well, we just, you know, we have a, it comes out of our desire for having things go forward.
Right.
And I think it is, there are these real positions of, you say that this is experimental, yet I see it conservative.
Right.
There's been a lot, I've talked about this as well, the kind of conservative experimentalism I feel like I'm relentlessly
totally.
Seeing.
That's really
for the, this quote-unquote
smart
new
real.
Work. I'm like,
yep.
Okay, well, like,
right.
for like the mid-aughts.
Totally. And then not, unlike in visual art, there's so often not any lineage ever noted in these things.
Right.
Theater, I really find
interesting.
That, I mean, right. Jess and others, we talk, it's like, I don't care. I know it. You taking that from there or that comes after.
Mm-hmm.
So does all of mine. But
right.
it's just so weird to sometimes not talk about that. It feels tied somehow to like this conservative experimentalism
mm-hmm.
to me a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Yeah.
If we knew these
well, they want to be like, look what I made. Look what I invented.
Yeah.
And you're like,
right.
you didn't.
Yeah. But no, that's not true. I mean, it's always back to Gypsy. You gotta right. get a gimmick if you wanna get ahead.
Yeah. I mean, related to your thing about like the money versus like what's
the
actually.
Art.
Yeah. Like I used to always have this chip on my shoulder too. I'm like, this show got so much money. You know what I mean? And why does it have to look this disgusting? Or like
tea. Absolutely.
But now I also realize the system doesn't really allow for the details or the beauty necessary. So it's like I'm actually still processing this out of what is really resulting in what a lot of what we must see.
Why does it have to look this disgusting?
Yay! Oh, Tina, you're going to have to come back.
I'd love to.
You're
going to
have to come back. We'll have a real, I mean, I can...
We'll do a Christmas... We'll see a play at Christmas.
Oh my God, totally.
We could go.
Show.
We could go see a play.
We'll see Radio City.
I could also take you to
me
see... But you must see dance.
I do. And I've like, you know, I've been close to Greg Zuccolo over the years and now Parker. And they've been my real dance educator. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Telling me
yeah.
who.
Yeah.
Or not telling me, but like, because I really didn't know much about dance at all. And have slowly
they know.
Paid
they
attention
know.
To
they
it a lot more.
Yeah.
Totally.
We can go see dance. We can go see a play. And hopefully we'll like it.
That would be really fun.
Even better if we don't.
Do you do this every week?
We
yeah.
do this.
Wow.
Every week. We have interviewed
commitment.
How many?
Over 80 people.
Over
it's
80
such
people
a cool
and have done
over 120 episodes.
Have done over 120 episodes.
It's
we've been
really
doing
incredible.
We've been doing it every week since the summer of 2017. I just want to, I was going to like ask about,
yeah.
I don't want to, we're going to save it for another time.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to you and I hanging out more.
Sure.
Because I feel like we've circled each other.
Yeah.
And I've been like,
it's finally come
this
to fruition.
When's
happen.
Your birthday?
June 19th.
Oh, so far.
Are you a Gemini?
I'm so Gemini.
You are so Gemini. And I am so Aquarius.
Wait, you're
Aquarius,
what are you?
Taurus and Reed is a Sag.
Really?
But most of my planets are in Scorpio. My rising
you
and a ton
seem
of my
real Scorpio. But my best friends are mostly Scorpio now.
Yeah, it has
real
it has
Scorpio.
A thing. It has a vibe. It's a vibe.
Oh yeah.
It's a vibe.
Tina, that was so fun. I can't wait
so
to have
fun.
You on again. Truly.
I know, I know,
thank
I know.
You.
We loves you. And listeners,
yeah.
we loves
thank
you. And go see Is This a Room?
Oh, you must.
It's extended.
Even I liked it. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. I mean, we have a great show for you on
YouTube. By the way, I
yes.
loved your re-recording of that commercial. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why did you re-record it?
I re-recorded it listening to me
now
doing
tell
the original.
Me why.
Because Jeremy's like, we should re-record this. And I was like, hi, well, just give me the earbuds. Let me listen to what I originally said. And I'll do it in tandem over
verbatim.
Myself. And then I just tried to start it. And then I was like, I got
that was
tired.
So weird.
But ladies and gentlemen, you should watch.
Somebody commented.
Watch our show. It's called The Dance Stuff Show. It's on YouTube.
And we have a special. Halloween edition.
It is a special
and it has
Halloween
movie magic
edition in it.
It has costumes.
It has costumes. It has me singing an audition song you won't believe.
You won't.
It has Reed talking about a haircut you won't believe. And you absolutely won't believe it. So watch it. It's on YouTube. We loves you.
We loves you.